They ain't misbehaving. They're just behaving.
Ain't misbehaving, saving my love for you.
Welcome to this episode of Ain't Misbehaving.
I'm Dr. Louisa, and I'm here to talk about your pets, some problems you may have,
and this episode's bonus question. Today, I want to talk about puppies. But before we get to that, here is the answer to last episode's bonus question. How can you go for 8 days without sleeping? Well, you can easily go for 8 days without sleeping by sleeping at night. So, back to puppies. Specifically, I want to talk about Belgian Tervuren puppies. The date is October 5th, 2019, and I am at the house of the breeder of Belgian Tervuren. Belgian Tervuren is a dog breed in the American Kennel Club herding group. I became aware of the breed in my teens when I read everything about dogs that I could lay my hands on. I only saw pictures, but I was struck by their beauty. They look like a cross between a collie and a German Shepherd. They are not a well-known breed. I had German Shepherds for a number of years and still have a soft spot for Shepherds. But when I lost my last Shepherd in 1986, I thought I was making a joke when I said to the vet at the Humane Society, "Well, let me know if you get any stray Belgian Tervuren in here." I was astonished when about a month later, I got a call from Nancy McClure. She had a Terv puppy that she was looking for a pet home for him. She had a Terv puppy that was not show quality, and she was looking for a pet home for him. Apparently, she was in a dog class with my vet friend, who gave her my number. And that's how I got Laszlo, my first Terv. I've had several dogs from Nancy in the past 35 years. The latest one I have is from her latest litter, the one that was born in 2019. So, being a veterinarian and being her friend, I was now involved with the whelping of this litter. And I had a chance to have a conversation with Nancy about breeding dogs.
So I'm here with my friend, Nancy, and she has this wonderful litter of puppies, and I'm just delighted. But I have some questions. So, Nancy, how long have you been a breeder?
Well, gosh, Louisa, my first litter was back in 1986. So over 30 years.
Wow. And was that Laszlo's litter?
That was. That was where you got your first one.
That was my first Terv. How often do you breed? I mean, you know, a lot of breeders, it's like they do this as a living and, you know, have a couple of litters a year. So I don't know. How many litters have you had? Or can you...
You know what? Probably in that time, I've probably had 9 litters at most. And that might be even counting ones that I might have co-bred with you.
Oh, okay.
And so... Once, maybe every 3 years.
About
the time in which I'm thinking of a dog for myself or someone, some other of my puppy people or other people in the breed have taken an interest in, and I think I can produce a litter that I think is worthwhile. Otherwise, I don't breed the girls.
So you put a lot of thought into this.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a big commitment to... put puppies out in the world that are going to live with other families, and knowing that you've created healthy and good temperamented puppies that are going to have a nice, happy life.
Yeah, so speaking of puppies, so...
As we're in here with the puppies right now that are not even 2 weeks.
So you might even hear them in the background. So, Twinkle is the mom, and so why did you decide to breed her?
Well, Twinkle was a pick out of my last litter. She's 3.5. She's done very well in the confirmation ring, has had some very nice wins against some large competition, both at a regional and national level. She's one of the nicest bitches. Of course, every generation, I think I've produced something better, which is the goal. And it was time for me. She's the only one I have right now, and I wanted another dog. And three and a half, it's a good age. So
all those factors came together.
All of them did, and I've held on to some frozen semen of a male of a littermate, actually to one of yours from mm-hmm. years ago, to Paxel. And I've just been waiting for the right generation and the right female to breed to him.
Yeah.
And I think that this hopefully is going to be producing what I hope it will, some nice dogs that meet the breed standard and will compete not only in the confirmation ring, but also in agility and herding and tracking and obedience and rally and nose work and scent work, you know, just everything. There's, you know, people are doing so much with them these days.
Yeah, that's amazing. One of the things I remember seeing was a bumper sticker that said, a well-balanced turve has a title on both ends.
Yeah, so it's a championship on one end and UDT, so the highest level in obedience and tracking title.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we have a lot of dogs that have gone well past that in today's world. So, you know, they're kind of, it's a great breed for you to be able to do just about anything you want to or not. And they're very versatile. They're very athletic. They're very devoted to their owners, and they like to do. So, you know, it's really your limit of what you want to do that they'll do for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember with the last turve I had, who, as you said, I named Paxel. She was my antidepressant. She kept me going. She was always cheerful. She went with me everywhere on trips and to nursing homes,
mm-hmm.
and her temperament was just golden. I just loved it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and that's what I breed for. Is when I first got into this breed in 1981, you couldn't go to a dog show and approach a Belgian Treviërne readily with not knowing whether or not the dog might be a fear biter or aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we've come a long ways in almost 40 years of improving on temperaments and health. You know, every breed has their health issues, and thanks probably to the internet and so on, and just longevity in the breed, knowing people for as long as I have, I believe I have a good grasp on what's behind my pedigrees in health issues, and have been able to breed away from things like epilepsy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I believe they're always still there. But, you know, not having hip dysplasia or elbow dysplasia, not having eye issues, all of that plays a factor.
Mm-hmm.
So...
yeah, because that brings me to another question. You know, I mean, a lot of times people think, oh, dog breeding, and, you know, it's so easy because mom takes care of everything, and, you know, they just go and they have a litter, and then you sell them for a bunch of money. And well, that's not quite the reality of it.
No, I mean, I guess if you were not invested into your puppies for what your hopes are for the future for each puppy, maybe... it might work that way, but every bit about this it is expensive, from paying all the prenatal care with the veterinarian before you even breed, to the vet appointments that you have, just like a pregnant mother would. You're going in and having checkups throughout the pregnancy. Then after the puppies are born, you continue with care, and even her diet. I was thinking today that in a sense her food alone right now is probably costing somewhere in the ballpark of around $15 to $20 a day.
Well, she's feeding 8 puppies.
That's right.
Yes.
But she needs to feed them in the right nutritional way.
Exactly.
So, for instance, goat's milk. She's getting a nice dose of goat's milk in her diet every day, along with egg and chicken and puppy, high-quality puppy kibble and adult kibble. It's just a lot of different things that go into that, probiotics, fish oil, a lot of things in the way of supplements, and it adds up, you know, and then even having the right environment for the puppies, having the correct whelping box and bedding and knowing what to do on the different developmental stages for socializing. All those things are very time-consuming. Being aware of that, so as you can see, the whelping box is in the bedroom, and we even have a camera on it so that if we're not in here, we can see what's going on.
Yeah.
We can keep track of if there's any issues, so whether or not the room's too cold, the puppies are getting too cold because or can't regulate their own body temperature at this point, if they're too hot, and then you have the risk of dehydration. You know, if somebody's in a situation where are frustrated, they're trapped behind mom, that's why there's the pig rail. All those things that we keep track of constantly, making sure the bedding's always clean so they're not in soiled bedding, which really at this point mom is doing her job. She's cleaning up after her babies. That's what nature tells her to do because they don't have their eyes and ears aren't functioning yet. So they're totally dependent on her. And part of that is to not leave any evidence that they're in existence.
Yeah, because that's really hardwired into their instinctual preservation of the
litter. Oh my gosh, yes. So she's now at the point where we're 12 days old now, and so she's spending more time out of the box, and which is good. She needs the recovery time because they're demanding a lot more food-wise from her at this point. We're gaining on the average of about 2 ounces a day per puppy, so that's a lot.
Yeah. And I used to tell people that the only animal that grows faster than a puppy is like a whale.
Wow. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
And so she has to give herself a break to get, she's drinking a lot of water right now. She's eating a lot. But she'll get up on the bed and she watches her puppies. So as soon as one of them makes a little noise, she goes down to check. So it makes it a constant revolving door all night long, which is not a lot of sleep happening for anybody right now.
Yeah. So what preparations do you do before breeding? I mean, you had mentioned, too, with Twinkle, the mother, there were all sorts of things you had to do before breeding, including all of these health checks.
Right. Well, because I am involved in showing these dogs in AKC shows and confirmation shows, one of the things that right from the very beginning is, do I have a show dog?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do I have a dog that's going to go out and readily earn its championship? Because if it's not able to go in the ring and compete against others of its breed and be able to win, then the question is it of quality that I want to breed?
Mm-hmm.
Because if it can't win, I have to determine, am I going to be able to breed better than it, than the dog I have? And if not, why am I breeding that dog?
Mm-hmm.
And potentially, maybe it doesn't have the temperament. I've had plenty of dogs in the past that never produced. I chose not to breed them for one reason or another. I didn't, their temperament wasn't what I wanted, so I didn't see a reason to perpetuate that. I might not have liked something overall about the dog's conformation. Maybe structurally it was less than what I had wanted, and there was no reason to perpetuate that. So the first thing is do I have a dog that's, you know, as close to the standard as I have at this point, and is it worth breeding? Mm-hmm. And really evaluating that based on what else is out there.
Yeah.
And
but you're talking about both the conformation, the look of the dog, and the temperament.
Temperament, structure, health, all of that. And then we do health clearances, some that are readily available, and they go into a nationwide online database. So
you're talking about the OFA?
Yes. Well, it's not OFA. Yes, it's OFA. There is no SURF anymore.
Oh, okay.
Now it's OFA for, we do for eyes. So, mm-hmm. And what they're really screening for on eyes is looking for any genetic, issues in the eyes. So you may have a dog that has, a spot of a cataract, but it's not, is something that is considered to be a hereditary.
Mm-hmm. And so do you know which eye issues are considered hereditary?
It depends on breed. Mm-hmm. And what their data keeps showing. So we've had some juvenile cataracts. It's been not very common, and certainly not a dog you would want to perpetuate breeding if it was determined to be the type of cataract that was hereditary. We have a few little things, but I would, our breed's pretty lucky. We don't have a lot, but we certainly test for it anyhow. Mm-hmm. And that's a test that, as a breeder, I do every year.
Mm-hmm.
Because eyes change just like they do for us. Mm-hmm. Then we do hips, they check for hip dysplasia through an x-ray. Our breed is, again, we're very lucky we don't have a lot of hip dysplasia. And they rate the hips on how tight the hip joint is. So the leg bone coming up into the ball and socket there. And it gets a rating from excellent down to dysplastic. So, it's a scale depending on what the x-ray shows. And then they also x-ray the socket at the elbow joint on the front legs.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that one's just a pass-fail. So it's either nicely sitting in the socket, or it looks, like it's got some dysplasia going on. So not resting, the socket isn't providing the strength and support there. Then we also test for thyroid in this breed, because thyroid is an issue for our breed. We tend to run on the low side with our thyroid. And so, if I had a dog that their thyroid was below normal and was in need of medication, I would have to really justify a reason why I would consider breeding that dog. So those are the main tests. And some breeds, heart, they do cardio tests. That has not been a strong one in ours. They now even, you can have the dentition done and recorded and put in the database. So lots of different things. It doesn't tell you about other health issues such as epilepsy.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, you're really working with, are there people that I know in the breed that I trust and know their dogs and know people that own their dogs? And I feel like I can get information that I can trust to be valid and honest. So that takes years to get to where you know what, who you're looking for, pedigrees and dogs behind dogs. And
yeah, so that's part of the value of being in a breed club.
Yes, certainly, that builds a network of people. It also has some responsibility with code of ethics of what you're committing to as both an owner, a member, a breeder of that organization. And also keeps you informed of a lot of other things within your breed, whether, your health committee is reporting out information or other research happening within your breed. But it certainly is a great way to be involved and not just be that isolated backyard breeder person or the person who might be showing but really isn't engaged with people across the country in their breed, per se. And every breed club is different, but, for a breed that doesn't have a huge number within any given population around the country, that network is a great way to get to know people and their dogs and ask questions and learn things. So
here we have in front of us.
Yeah, they're probably 12 days today.
12 days. And their eyes are just beginning to open.
Right. The little corner slit on the inside is starting to gape a little.
But still, right now, they're mostly eating and sleeping.
They are. But you'll watch them twitch, and that's nature's way of keeping the muscles active since they don't do much else. We do want muscle activity. Yeah. So they'll build up that strength to be able to walk, which they're testing at this point. But yeah, mainly eating and sleeping and some noise making.
Well, they're very cute. And I know they're going to get cuter. I've seen puppies before. So with this litter, each from the time that I've known you and breeding and whatnot, each litter has had a designation. And that's kind of the fun part of it. There's nothing that you have to, there's no rules about that.
No, and every person does that differently, every breeder. Some go through the alphabet. So they have their first litter is their A litter, and then their B litter, and their C, and then they start over once they've gotten through 20-some litters. And others do themes. And I've just been a theme person. And so this is my dream litter.
A dream litter.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because I'm breeding back to a dog that was one of my favorites from years ago. And I'm really hoping that all the qualities that he possessed, that he has produced in other kids of his, will show up in this. And she's a beautiful girl. I think the best that he's been bred to. So
Yeah, so I'm breeding the best to the best.
I hope so.
Hope for the best.
That's right. Yeah. And now it's, you know, it's all that effort and time that you put into figuring out that pedigree and how it matches up and what you think it's going to bring to the table. When you look at all those things of temperament and health and the structure and the conformation of the type and you weigh all of that and think, you know, is this going to be the right pairing to get me, you know, what I'm hoping for?
Yes.
And then you have to wait and see. And of course, everybody else is anxiously hoping for the same thing, that's getting a puppy. So
one of the things that always comes up when there are litters of puppies, like, oh my gosh, you know, you got to find homes for them all. But it sounds like you've done that before you even began thinking about breeding.
Well, I think I'm lucky that because I've been in this breed for so long now that people will come to me before I've even talked about breeding and have said, you know, I'm interested in a puppy when you breed her.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes it nice. Or I also have the word of mouth that when people find I've done a breeding or let people know, people come to me. I don't have to go out and advertise to say I have puppies available.
Mm-hmm.
I usually can pick and choose whether or not I think I have the right puppy for people.
Yeah.
This litter is going to be a little more challenging because there's six boys. And one issue we do have in our breed is whether or not the cord on the testicles is long enough that they drop down into the sac.
And you don't know that.
You don't know it at this age. And we may not know that till up to even 8 weeks of age, and it could still be a gamble. And I have some homes that, you know, that has to, that's a must.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally understand that. And so out of the six boys, whether they all six are ready and good to go at 8 weeks or not, is a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Well, they are all beautiful.
Thank you.
I can tell you that.
They're little sausages.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
This is fun. I may be back.
I know, our first talk about a litter in a while.
Yeah. And it's wonderful to see them growing up. The last litter, 3 years ago, which was where Twinkle came from.
Yeah, 3.5 years ago.
Yeah, you were right next door that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to get pictures of like every day and video, and I have a PowerPoint presentation that I give on the celestial litter. That was the celestial litter.
Yeah, that's why her name is Twinkle.
It's where Twinkle came from.
She's a little star. Yeah, you know, it's a lot of fun because they change so much. So, you know, they were born at 10 ounces to 14, and now we're pretty much almost everybody over 2 pounds, and they're trying to walk now. It's just fun to, now we're getting into the fun stage where they're going to start being able to see the world and hear the world and interact with us. So,
well, I will be back. I'll be back weekly to check on these puppies and maybe even get them to say something for us.
Well, I don't think that'll be too hard.
Yes? Well, I did go back many times as the puppies grew. I helped with the early neural stimulation and exposing the pups to novel stimuli. I ended up becoming completely enamored of the litter, and when they were 8 weeks of age, I brought home Flicka. Her registered name is Monarch's What Dreams May Come. So now, on to the bonus question. Are you ready? What was the highest mountain on Earth before Mount Everest was discovered? If you think you know the answer, send an email to info@radiotacoma.org with bonus question in the subject line, and I will get back to you with something wonderful.
Join us again for more sagas from the world of pet behavior problems. This is Dr. Louisa reminding you,
they ain't misbehaving, they're just behaving.
I don't stay out late, don't care to go. I'm home about it, just me and my radio. Ain't misbehaving, saving my love for you. Ain't misbehaving, saving my love for you.